Welcome to Careers in Your Ears, the careers podcast for PhDs and research staff produced at King's College London. I'm Donald Lush, one of the team of specialist careers consultants for researchers here at King's. Today, we're celebrating International Women's Day with a special episode, and I'm delighted to be joined by Drs. Amal Abuzeynab, Lovelin Obi, and Rokshi Ghazyani. Welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. So let's start with introductions. So can I ask you to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your current job? So Amal, let's start with you.
Okay, thank you. So I am an academic advisor and architect, and I work at De Montfort University. I'm the Institute Head of Research Students, Institute of Architecture. And my current research looks into contemporary topics and issues such as green transitions, sustainable development goals, user-centered design and decision-making. And I use social sciences in my research methods.
Wow, there's a lot of ground cover there. That's really interesting. Lovelin, how about you?
Hello, my name is Lovelin Obi. I'm a senior lecturer at Northumbria University. I'm a quantity surveyor by profession, construction manager as well. And my areas around research focused on offsite construction, circularity, quantity surveying practices. And I've always been interested in artificial intelligence, so I'm looking more into that area and how that influences our practices within the built environment and construction industry as a whole.
So, fantastic. So sure. Again, you've got several jobs. Fantastic. So Rokshi, come to you finally for this question.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Rokshid. I am originally from Iran. I've been in the UK for over 19 years. I'm a lecturer at the moment in architecture and interiors at University of Portsmouth. I joined in September 2022 after 5 years of teaching at DMU. I teach for both disciplines of architecture and interior. Architecture and design, and I do research related to school design, biophilic design, and health and well-being. I've got also a role recently as a mentor for other staff at the school to help them developing their research career. And I have got a couple of funded research projects at the moment that I'm working on. Thank you.
Wow. So everybody is multitasking and doing several amazing things all at once. That's fantastic to hear. So I guess that leads me on to the very obvious question. Given that you've all got several things that you're connected with or are actually doing outside academic life, but you've made a conscious choice to pursue academic life. And I'm wondering what made you make that choice? Did you obviously have considered other things as well? So what's made you focus on academic life? So Amal, you first, I think.
Okay. So for me is really, I would say, two reasons. So before, as I said, like as an architect, so I practice both in Sudan and in the UK as well. And when I was studying, doing my master's and then my PhD, I really encountered extremely, I always call them true academics, who are very highly trusted, highly respectful, and at the same time, they are very kind and generous. And I felt I want to be in that environment. So that's my first reason. And the second reason is that I really love kind of like very much knowledge oriented and learning oriented. And for me, it's kind of like a really just a good fit to be in academia. So I would say those are my two reasons for becoming in academia. Yes.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, it's great to hear that those are really kind of positive reasons we don't hear enough about, I think. Lovelin, what drew you in? What made you want to be an academic?
I'll just say, starting out, my mom used to lecture back in Nigeria. But outside of that, when I started out my BSc, I was privileged to have this tutorial group where we just sit together and discuss things, myself and my coursemates at the time. And I got interested in the fact that, you know, you could teach people and they could understand things. Then after a while, it became something I really love to do. So outside of just my normal degree work, I would teach people probably from higher education, you know, then they call them secondary schools then. So I would try to go around and teach them. But when I started working, practicing as a QS, I had the placement students under my care, and there were quite a lot of things that I saw a gap in when they were coming from industry to, you know, what they had learned from uni. And there was so much gap that from there, I got engaged with the program. I started doing part-time, and then I moved full-time into academia because there was more passion about developing people rather than just looking at the project for me. So that was what, you know, originally brought me into academia. Carried on with teaching, and from there I got to meet research friends, people that were researchers, and you know, you can't just continue teaching if you can inform your teaching via research, and that's what pulled me into research, and that's been the cycle for me all the way.
Wow, so you were kind of drawn into it. Never because one of the things we sometimes talk a lot about in the work that I do is how conscious the decisions are, you know, and how much it's about opportunities that present themselves to you. And it seems like it was a bit of both for you. Brockshead, how about you? What drew you into academic life?
Yes, sure. I think my mom, as an academic, was there for the first person encouraged me to start this path. Although I was working in a practice in Iran and or several practices during my study to complete like a master in architecture that time, but she encouraged me to try teaching basically, even part-time at the same university I studied in, and I did. Then I realized if I want to have a progress or choose academic path as a career, then I need a PhD. And therefore, also during my study, I had the opportunity to go to US for 6 months, and I visited a couple of universities there. Then I started to search and apply for a PhD in several universities, especially in the UK. And then I came here in 2004, and I started my PhD at the University of Sheffield. But at the same time, this opportunity appeared that you could have a PG cert in higher education in order to have a, you know, teaching career. When I was in 2005, then I started that at the School of Education in Sheffield, which was really great, I can say that, and helped me to also teach part-time at the same time. And also basically was probably the foundation, a starting point to continue. But as a person, I think always I was enjoying to share my knowledge and skills with others and also learn from others as even a child or when I was just, you know, the beginning of my university around age 18. And so I think this is still I learn. I enjoy learning as well as sharing this skill and knowledge, both in research and teaching. And I think this is probably a kind of a passion at the moment to continue.
Fabulous. Thank you. I'm really loving how positive you all are about the attractions of the work, because I think it's easy in academic life to hear about some of the challenges and the difficulties. So we are going to talk a little bit about that. So we're here to celebrate International Women's Day and women in academia and in research. And generally speaking, in the UK, academic life is generally ruled by white men in the most senior positions still, although things are changing. So I want to ask if you've run into any barriers as you've been trying to move your career forward, and what's really helped you overcome them. So Emma, let's start with you again.
Okay, I think that's almost like one of the very fundamental questions, I think, in academia about what are the things that are really, really hard in academia and what are the barriers. And of course, I did my homework for this podcast. So I kind of like I did a bit of reading, but also I reflected on my own experience and things like that. And for me, I would say I have kind of like three major barriers, I would say, that I have faced, and also when I look at what is being done in terms of women in academia and everything, it's kind of like really resonated very well. So the first one is, I call them the gatekeepers. We have in academia a lot of gatekeepers, and some of those academic, those gatekeepers, they do have their own agenda and their own stuff. And they make it very difficult to give you access to certain things that will help you with your visibility, that would help you with kind of like getting the right projects and doing the right things at the right time and being at the right places. So for me, those are those gatekeepers, I think, one of the biggest barriers. And then the second one, which is, I think, again, this is very much a systematic thing. In academia, we are expected to do more and more with less and less. Mm-hmm. And for me, this kind of like creates that problem of almost like you kind of like feel you are firefighting all the time and you're just dealing with the little stuff, and that they take time and very time sensitive. But then they don't allow for that kind of like big thinking. Let's look at the big picture. Let's do that kind of like horizon scanning and see what are the opportunities and go to those networks and so on and so forth. So for me, again, that's really big thing. And the last thing, which is related to the, again, to do more and more with less and less, it's kind of like sometimes this creates a misalignment between the teaching and research. And for me, for example, when I look into the work I do, it's very much contemporary topics and issues. And then those cannot be done, for example, in an undergrad level, because they are really just basic. They need that kind of like basic understanding. So I cannot do real research at that level. It starts with kind of like a postgrad and then doctoral education and things like that, because I can prove the concept with those, let's say, master students and doctoral students as well. We can do something together. There could be like some collaboration and some stuff like that. So for me, those are broadly the barriers. Kind of I see them, and I kind of like it's kind of like really had an effect on how I progress, or like what are the pace of the progress, let's say, because I think in academia we do progress even if it's a small bits, because we always have some development opportunities, we go to conferences here and there, so there are things that we it does kind of like, yeah, give us that progress, but not the pace that I'm kind of like expecting of myself, or it doesn't maybe correlate with, let's say, the competence or the thing that I kind of like really envisioned for myself. And the things that helped, despite those kind of stuff, I call it the sponsorship. So for me, at the time when I had really kind of, again, I was in the right places and with the right people and right environments, it wasn't like something that I envisioned or anything, because I'm busy with my day-to-day life and day-to-day duties. But then I had people who are extremely senior, and they almost like knew what I'm kind of like capable of. They took the time to look into my profile. They took the time to look into the CV and everything. And then they would suggest, okay, go to this, attend this one, be part of this committee. And they tell me like, what is the reason for that? So for me, sponsorship in academia is really key if we are very, very kind of like true and we are real about kind of like the advancement and the progress of women in academia.
Great, that's fantastic. Thank you. Lavlin, how about you? Any barriers you think you might have run into?
Oh, yes, I think Amalas mentioned a few, but I just kind of speak from my experience. The first one I went through as a great barrier is a lack of inclusive structure. What I mean by that is you come in as a woman, you've got quite a peculiar characteristics. I would also speak for myself, for example, coming from an African ethnic background, where we've got quite, you know, the structure of the family system and responsibilities are quite different and huge. And you tend to struggle sometimes to look for role models that understand the peculiarity of the background, to how that impacts on your progression at work. And for me, people couldn't really understand that. And that was a barrier to me, because I had, at the time, I was teaching quite loads of, you know, modules, and then I've got some research aspects I needed to fulfill. And then I need to think about my progress, one, as a researcher and a researching academic. And all of those things combined with my family responsibilities, you know, in my thought, where you would start to talk about the nuclear family. So there's much responsibilities that you need to balance with the work. And there were no ready role models that understood the peculiarity and the challenges. And that for me was a major barrier, because I was looking for, okay, who has gotten through this experience? Who can advise me in direction based on this background? And I couldn't see any. You know, easier to overcome it. I had to actually reach out to, well, I say senior members, professor, they were male, but I had to sit them down and say, look at juggle through what I'm doing, my academic work, my research work, every part of me, and then look at the family front with my children. And how do you navigate this? You know, and one person, I say, okay, lovely, you know what, let's have a meeting. Like, I had about 2 hours of meeting, sitting through to say, okay, this is how you can place this here. You know, don't definitely, your well-being is important. Don't compromise family. But this is how you need to chart, you know, your growth. So like other people will have 2 years, but because of what you've got, you probably have to chart almost 3 to 4 years to achieve the same thing. But that gave me guidelines, and I was able to meet, you know, work with mentors that also from a BIM background that were able to guide me on, okay, this is the next step. There are sometimes you need to just shadow a little bit. You can't go up front because you can't compromise family, but at the same time, gain some extra months from your research back to teaching. So all those balances kind of helped me to overcome it. And I got switchy to walk into improving myself. And that consideration of the background was quite important. And that was how I was able to overcome some of the barriers, you know, chatting my way forward into the next progression I've got as an academic.
Fantastic. So two people so far, I think one thing I'm really hearing very clearly is about mentorship and sponsorship and speaking to people and getting that kind of mutual understanding. So Rokshid, was it the same for you? Did you run into the same barriers, or have you got other ideas on that issue?
Well, I think there will be definitely some similarities. Yes, I think I would share my experience and some of the tools. I think it's quite obvious based on, I work in 7 institutions so far, some part-time only teaching, but some full-time and both teaching and research, especially in 3 institutions. I think it's quite obvious in some institutions that women should work a lot to prove their capabilities, unfortunately, especially if you are in a new institution. And it takes time to prove. And if most active researchers are men in that institution. So I have had that experience. But I think it takes time to show that you are capable. However, I heard from my male colleagues that yes, you can work at the weekend, and of course, when people are single, they don't have children, you know, or just they live with a partner, the family, the life outside university we have got is different in terms of, you know, our time and dedication we could have. Therefore, I think it's good to just highlight it that we are not having the same situation. I mean, I would like to work at the weekends, and sometimes I do. I have to because of deadlines and evening time. But I don't think it's very fair to my 2 children. And it's not very healthy as well. We need to think about our health and well-being and also other people around us. So based on my experience as an immigrant here for 19 years plus with 2 children, I would like to highlight women and their responsibility outside their full-time job that needs to be recognized by the head of the schools, by other colleagues. There should be discussions about it. And even other things such as maternity gaps that I had to on the impact of it probably on your research career sometimes, and to that you need some time to make it up. And some of the barriers, I think, just working extra time that some people can do. I think these are all needs consideration and discussion. Thankfully, in my previous institution, DMU, and also here at University of Portsmouth, because I have been part of this equality and diversity committees, and I was a representative at the faculty before and also nowadays to work toward Athena Swan and, you know, this kind of gender and inclusion aspects. Now I have the opportunity to raise that voice as a female researcher, and I also learned quite a lot in the past from my mentor, who was a female, and the deputy dean, they were female, and they could actually understand us and give us that opportunity to just, for example, have less contribution to REF because of some of the barriers or family issues they had. But it's not probably common in every institution. And I think that could be a norm, not just a kind of you need to suffer and then they find a solution. I think it should be somewhere considered. So now, as a representative of my school at the faculty, also being part of this equality and diversity committee at the school, I try to highlight some of these issues related to women's rights and basically their barriers, and basically to maybe inform some other male colleagues that may not be aware of it. But also I try to support and empower women as my new role, which is like research mentoring liaison at the school, to support them with their research goals and career.
Great, thank you. So I think, echoing what everyone else has said, but I think you made a really good point about changing the structures of the organisation. I think that's really important. I think that reflects in what our other two speakers said as well. So let's move on. So International Women's Day is about celebrating the achievements of women worldwide. So do you see your research contributing to the empowerment of women? Is that a factor in what you're doing? So Amal, let's start with you again.
My direct answer would be yes, because I think I do believe in role modeling, and I do believe in kind of like relatable role models. And for me, when I look at academia, it's almost, for me, diversity in academia is about diversity of thinking, diversity of perspectives, diversity of backgrounds. And for me, yeah, just literally, I think being there, it's important having that role model. Yeah.
Yeah, being there, being visible, doing what you're doing. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So, Lovelyn, how do you feel about that issue?
Yeah, yes, it is. How do I explain it? Beyond research, to be honest, it's beyond research. Even at the teaching level, I'm a program leader. One of the things I look into is ensuring that there is room for appreciating our diversities. Particularly as women, engaging, you know, with young talent, women, to just, you know, get engaged, get involved, be audible, be visible, you know, looking at research, for example, into degree apprenticeship. I'm promoting that, and it's good to see that we have women taking on all these DA, you know, apprenticeship roles, and in various organizations, which is expanding the breadth of women, particularly in construction, and not just construction in terms of trades, construction in terms of being professionals within that field. So yes, that visibility, that encouragement is quite important. It's also about breaking barriers. Sometimes some of the research we do in built environment, people look and say, oh, what are you doing in artificial intelligence? What are you doing in circular economy? You know, sometimes there is that male dominance in some of the research areas that I believe that women are beginning to break lose into. You know, we can, we're not competing, but we also have rooms to contribute into some of those research spaces, and that's what I'm doing, enjoying what I'm doing, but still breaking grounds into areas that we feel is actually male dominated, to say that women can also contribute to those research areas. So yes, that's how I'm contributing with mine.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and Rokshid, how about you? How's it look for you?
Yes, I think I would like to, and I try to as well. But besides empowering women, I also try to empower children and young people, and also from different backgrounds, because this is relates also to my research, which is about bringing these voices to designers, policymakers. So I work with them. So regarding women and empowering them, somehow it all happened through a funding for a kind of GCRF networking fund with Academia of Medical Science, that I contacted actually a number of female researchers I knew in Far East countries. And it appeared that all the collaborators, they became like women researchers, and we worked together successfully, and we could basically empower each other to finish this project well. And also I had a few funded projects that I could employ a research assistant, and I employed actually international female students, for example, or also UK students as well, so all female. Somehow I found and I heard from them how that small opportunity, even for a few weeks, helped their CV and career. So that was basically something valuable and great to hear. Yes, I try. However, it might be a small step or that I can make, but I try to.
Great, thank you. So this is our last question. So this is for our audience. What advice would you have for young women starting out on a research career now? What one top tip would you have for them? So Amal, let's start with you again.
I think for me is that academia still is got like really good people. So find those good people, hold on to them, and they will guide you. They will sponsor you. Just find them. It takes a bit of time. They are sometimes could be in a hidden corner because they are really, they just like overburdened sometimes with time. But find them. They are really great people and they will guide you through the way.
Great. Thank you. Lovely. What's your tip?
Have the two sides of the coin, meaning look for a mentor sponsor that is male, look for a mentor sponsor that's a woman. Why? For the male, you can understand what the targets will look like. For the female, you can understand how to balance to fit in those targets and take them off. And I think, quite importantly, academia is a very wonderful place to be in. It's, for me, I see it as a workshop to mold, you know, mold products, but this time around we're looking at people, minds that can influence contemporary and future practices out there in the world. So if you are going to participate or engage with something in the real world, it's being crafted from the minds of people in academia. So come and be a part of those people, molding those minds so that what you can see in the real world is exactly what you're expecting to see there. And you can grow through the wrongs, just ensure you've got the right ticks. One male, one female, and then all, and work towards the strengths and weaknesses and combine that to improve yourself.
Brilliant. Thank you. Rashid, over to you.
Thanks, Donald. Yes, I think my advice would be, first of all, you should love this path, because in terms of income, for example, it might not be comparable with some other types of jobs you may have, for example, in industry. But if you love it and you enjoy it, you have got the job satisfaction. Therefore, you need to be patient, and you should accept sometimes the journey is tough. When you want to find a job, like myself, sometimes you need to apply for so many times, many institutions. It may take time because it's very competitive. We need to understand this reality that for every academic job, we may have 100 candidates applying. So be aware of it. And then when you apply for these opportunities. So it needs a lot of patience, strength, and just not giving up, and motivate yourself, I think, by being in touch with successful academic and researchers to learn from them, from learning from their journey also, because we all have had up and downs always, you know, and also when you change institutions or because of personal reasons. So I think having a mentor also would be helpful, or having a network of successful people that they could guide you somehow, how to start, how to continue, especially when you have got some difficult challenges. And then at the end, yes, don't give up and continue.
Brilliant. Thank you. I think it's really been lovely how you've been all three of you have been incredibly honest, but very, very positive about what you're doing and very encouraging. And I do hope our audience take lots of encouragement from you from listening to this. So we're wrapping up now. So I'd like to say a huge thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today and for contributing your insights and your wisdom. And join us next time on Careers in Your Ears when we'll continue our exploration of researchers' careers.
Thank you, Donald.
Thank you so much.